headquarters of Ramsey Solutions, broadcasting from the Pods Moving and Storage Studios. It's the Ramsey Show, where we help people build wealth, do work that they love, and create actual amazing relationships. George Camel, Ramsey personality, host of the extremely popular new George Camel YouTube show, and also the podcast called, well, at least he's a co-host of it, called A Smart Money Happy Hour, and you can check both of them out. He and Rachel Cruz do that one together. Phone number here as we talk to you about your life and your money is 888-825-5225. Josh starts off this hour in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Doing great. How are you doing, Dave?
Better than I deserve. What's up?
So, a question for you. My wife and I have a household income of just over $100,000, and we're completely through baby steps 1 through 3. And I'm wondering how, with the current house market, we don't have a home, are saving up for a home, how do baby steps 4 and 5 change for us?
Why would they change?
Well, we are just saving up for a home and working towards that down payment. We're almost ready for the down payment.
Okay. Have you ever heard us talk about the thing we call baby step 3B?
I have heard a little bit, yes.
Okay. That's what you're talking about, I think. Okay. So you finish your emergency fund at 3. That is the point at which you would begin to save for your home. And some people push pause and don't do 4 and don't start saving for retirement until they build their fully, until they get their house down payment. Some people save for a house while they're putting something in retirement up to 15% for baby step 4. So you can do either one or both somewhere in there.
So how long is this going to take to save up your down payment?
We have a specific goal? So we're thinking mid next year, we're going to have a little bit larger down payment than is required. And we're doing 8% of our household income into Roths right now.
Okay. And so while doing 8%, you'll still have that down payment by mid next year?
Yeah, we're putting away 8% into the Roths, and about 40% of savings just goes away into CDs until we're ready for a down payment.
That's fabulous, Josh. Well done. Yeah, that's what we would call baby step 3B. So 3B is all of your savings goes into your house down payment fund up or down to a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less than all, because you're putting some or up to 15% into retirement. So you're putting 8 into retirement and you're still going to meet your down payment goals. Doesn't change a thing. It's exactly what I would do. Have at it.
Okay. And then would you hold off at all until interest rates come down?
Nope.
Or just when we get that down payment ready?
No, nope. Buy a house when you're ready.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. If interest rates come down after you buy the house, refinance. House prices aren't coming down. We've not seen substantial drops in house prices ever in the real estate market except during the 2008 debacle. And we're not going to see them now. We've told you this for 2 years because we've still got a shortage of housing. There's not enough inventory. Too many buyers chasing too few items causes price to maintain stability or go up. So house prices are going to be going up, and I wouldn't sit around and watch the house prices go up while I'm waiting on interest rates to go down. Bad plan.
I don't time the stock market or the real estate market.
Exactly.
Both involve some risk. And
the only time I would time the real estate market is if I can't find a deal when I'm buying investment property.
And then wait.
Because the market's like white hot and there is no deals. I'm just don't buy unless I get a good deal. Period. I do not buy investment property unless I steal it. Period. I want to get a great buy on investment property. Your money's made at the buy on that. But as far as your personal residence goes, buy when you're ready, which is when you're debt-free, have your emergency fund in place, and have saved your down payment.
Yeah. And I get interest rates have got people freaked out because, you know, it's hundreds of dollars more in your payment. And they're going, well, I need to wait. The problem, like you're saying, Dave, is those same people are going to call us and say, Dave, I waited and now the home price is $100,000 more than it was.
Well, and there's no guarantee interest rates come down.
I mean, we just saw the Fed just...
What if you sat around and waited and they went to 10?
Yeah, they just raised the rates again. So we just don't know.
Yeah, 1978 September, I got my real estate license. I was 18. That was the year interest rates went from 9.75% to 10% for the very first time ever. And if it did it then, and then it went on up to 18 before it came back down, and it took it a decade to do that reversal, to go on up and then back down. If it did it then, why can't it do it now? I mean, I don't know. These bozos continue to screw with this. They're going to mess it up. I mean, so I wouldn't be sitting around waiting on the outside environment to get you ready. You get ready, Strike while the iron's hot. Jocelyn is, and get a good real estate agent to help you make good, clear decisions. Jocelyn is with us in Miami. Hey, Jocelyn, how are you?
Hey, so good. So nice to be able to talk to you guys.
You too. What's up?
So I have a family quinceañera trip coming up next June.
A family what?
Think of a sweet 16, quinceañera.
Quinceañera.
Oh, okay, okay. My Spanish is limited to my hillbilly, so. Okay, I got you. Sweet 16.
Yes, think of a sweet 16. It's on a cruise, and I'm currently on baby step two. I have $60,000 in debt, and we've been working on, you know, paying it down as quickly as possible, but this trip is coming up, and everyone's kind of reserving it, and I don't know who's
turning 16?
My niece, my first niece.
Oh. And you're supposed to go on a cruise because she's turning 16.
Yes. It's a tradition.
It's a great tradition. I love it.
It is for rich people. It is, honestly.
That's stuff rich people ought to do right there.
Yeah.
Not broke people. It wasn't a tradition in my house growing up. We didn't have that kind of money. I never saw the ocean until I was 15.
Yeah.
So how much is this cruise going to cost?
It's going to be around, it would be around probably $8,000.
Oh, my goodness. Where are y'all going? Around the world and back?
I didn't choose this cruise, okay? I'm just trying to, you know, see how to go best. What's the best way to go about it? Because I understand it's expensive, and I understand I'm trying to pay off
debt. But you're not going to be out of debt by then.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you make a year?
$90,000.
Okay. And how much debt have you got, hon?
60.
And how old are you?
30.
Okay. Well, you're a big girl. You get to make your own decisions. You don't have to do what Dave and George say. You can do whatever you want to do, right? I can tell you what Dave and Sharon Ramsey would have done if we were in your situation. We would have wished our niece good luck and have a great time. We're not going to be able to join you because we're broke people. That's what we would have told them. But you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. I can tell by talking to you already. You're going on the cruise. There's no way you could tell these people no. You don't have it within your being. You can't just smile and say no. Nope. $8,000 for a 16-year-old. Lord Jesus, buy her a car.
And when you don't have the money, it's going to compound the debt problem. You're going to have to put her on a credit card.
You could have bought her a really nice car. But, I mean, and she's going to go in debt for her student loans for when she goes to school when she turns 18, right? I'm going to have a small calf here. This is The Ramsey Show. So here's a quick math refresher. There are only 24 hours in a day, so your business needs to streamline tasks that are time suckers and focus on activities that make money. So to reduce headaches as they scale, smart businesses use NetSuite by Oracle, the number one cloud financial system. NetSuite helps you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform. So join the more than 37,000 smart businesses like Ramsey Solutions that have done the math and graduated to NetSuite. And right now you can download NetSuite's KPI checklist absolutely free at netsuite.com/Ramsey. That's netsuite.com/Ramsey. George Camel, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host. Open phones at 888-825-5225. You jump in. We'll talk about your life and your money. So the Feds raised the rate again, another quarter of a point.
How many times have they done this now?
Well, they're just not smart. You know, because the economy's just booming, so we should definitely do things to screw it up and slow it down. We can't have that. And, of course, they want to get all the pain out of the way before there's a presidential election. So they're getting all this crap out because people will forget to be mad 2 years from now.
Now's the time. This is the 10th time, it says, that they've raised the rates.
And all in a process to slow down inflation that was not caused by an overheated economy. It was caused by an underheated supply chain caused by Fauci. So
so attack the wrong problem, you get the wrong solution.
Yeah, you just should have fired him long before he finally got around to quitting, and then you'd have been better off. When you have math done by the medical community, apparently they're not good at it. So this is how what we get into. So anyway, yeah.
What does
so,
it mean?
Anyway, let me try to explain what I'm rambling about and mumbling about here. So the problems with inflation were caused by supply chain disruption. Supply chain disruption is defined as a shortage of goods. The shortage of goods, anytime there's a shortage of anything, it causes the prices to go up. Remember toilet paper? And so there's a rush on it, and the prices go up, and people price gouge and everything else. There's a shortage on oil because you turn the pipeline off because you have an electric thing going or whatever it is you got going. A green thing you got going, and you turn the pipeline off and you shut down the supply of gasoline, gasoline prices go up. So the bumper, the little sticker on there that says, I did that with Biden. Yes, he did. He did not do the other parts of inflation, but they were caused by simply Fauci, because when you shut down all the factories and they don't produce stuff, you create a shortage of stuff. And the shortage of stuff causes the prices to go up. Oh, by the way, when you declare an entire segment of the economy as non-essential, you're not essential. Talk about freaking insulting. How would you just like to be called non-essential? How do you recover from that psychologically? You're non-essential. I'm essential, but you're not essential. That's the ultimate in snobbery. But anyway, we did do that, right?
Yes.
And so if you're non-essential, then you create, and then when you want everybody to come back to work, well, they go, screw you, I'm non-essential. I'm not coming back to work. By the way, you're giving me lots of money to stay at home, so I'm not going to come back to work. Screw you. I'm not going to wait your tables. I'm not going to make your beds at the hotel, and I'm not going to stock your shelves at Target. Oh, well, what if we paid you $20 an hour instead of $10 an hour? Oh, then I would come back. Okay, then you came back at double the rate almost what you were paid pre-COVID. Oh, by the way, that cost of that loaf of bread has in it the labor to put the loaf of bread on the shelf, which is now double because of the shortage created by quarantine. So even labor was supply chain disrupted. All of that created this artificial inflation that would have smoothed out on its own if the freaking Fed had stayed out of it. But instead, they decide they're going to slow the economy down because it's white hot, which it's not. It was just going through a burp. Rat through a snake trying to get itself straightened out after the quarantine created by Fauci. So now we have a Federal Reserve that is trying to screw in a Phillips head screwdriver with a hammer.
And they keep ratcheting this thing
up. They're using the wrong tool.
So they're trying to ratchet this interest rate up to calm people down. But people don't seem to be stopping their spending either. We're at record high consumer debt across the board.
No, they slowed the real estate market down.
Which,
for sure.
Didn't help a ton, it seems.
No, it's still, we still have a shortage of housing compared to the supply of buyers. But anyway, so bottom line is the Fed is stupid, and they're trying to use 1970s and 1980s monetary policy to slow down a different type of inflation that was not created by the interest rate environment. And they're trying to use the interest rate environment, so they're literally using the wrong tool on the economy. They really are using a hammer on a screw, and it doesn't work. So this is what you're dealing with. But hey, the Island of Misfit Toys continues their parade in Washington, so you can just count on it.
So we're going to see rates go up on all types of debt.
The Fed rate, to be clear, is nothing to do directly to the mortgage rate. Okay, mortgage rates created by the bond market. So whatever the bond market does is what the mortgage rates are going to do. The Fed rate is what banks borrow from other banks for. And so one bank is now borrowing from another bank if it needs some money at 0.25% higher. So their cost of money is higher. So anything that bank does is going to be upcharged.
They pass it down to the consumer.
So they're going to jack up your auto rates, borrowing rates, credit card rates, personal loan rates,
student loans,
home equity loan rates, anything that a bank product that's going into the market. Now, mortgages are not a bank product. Mortgages are a bond market product, so they're not directly tied. But mortgage rates, the bond market has kind of followed along with this particular set of increases. So that's why we have higher mortgage rates while we've had Fed increases. So not to panic, but just more general disgust with the economic incompetency of what these people call themselves as leaders. And it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. Stupid is just stupid.
There is silver lining, Dave, though. Interest rates for savings accounts also will get a bump, which is good for those saving up for their down payments or their emergency funds.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, okay?
Not life-changing.
1980, I'm in college. Rates are, mortgage rates were 17%.
Wow.
1980, 1981, 17%. And my grandpa, at that time in his 70s, was loving it because he had CDs and money market accounts down at the old savings and loan that were paying 11%.
Wow.
He had a savings account, CD rates, 11%. He was loving it. He thought it was just fancy because he didn't have any debt and he wasn't going to go get a mortgage. And he was just cashing in on these high interest savings accounts. So, but my question, George, is the trade-off worth it? I mean, do you really want 11% savings rates, and the trade-off is you got an 18% mortgage rate?
Mm.
Nope, don't want that. Not good. Not good. Not healthy for anybody. Sorry that your savings account sucks at 1% back when we had 3% mortgage rates, but 3%, 4%, 5% mortgage rates were a good
thing.
Because
it hurts the economy more than it helps your bank account.
It's just stupid on steroids. And the banks are cleaning up. They're cleaning up when this happens.
Either way, they're making their money.
You can count on the banks making their money, and you can count on the politicians drawing their paycheck. Where if we had those people paid based on their effectiveness, they'd all be in the bread line. But
then who's going to pass that? Because they're not going to do that.
Well, they're not. They can't even pass term limits to send themselves home when they can't. Sonny is with us. Sonny's in St. Louis. Sonny, give us some sunny news.
Hey, it's always sunny where I'm at, Dave.
I hear you, brother.
Yeah, but what I'm calling about is me and my wife, when we got married, she had a bunch of savings. I had a little bit of debt. And then she had about probably like $72,000 in savings. And we bought some property from her parents that we intend to build on. And she put 25% or 20% down on it. And now she has more in savings. We still have some debt, but I feel like it's unfair for me to ask her to pay on our debt with that money if a lot of the debt is mine that I brought into our marriage. Not that we're not together on it, but
you're married, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if she gets cancer, is it unfair for you to take care of her?
What's that? I'm sorry.
If she gets cancer, is it unfair for you to take care of her?
No, of course not.
Well, you didn't cause it. Not your fault. I'm trying to use your own logic back on you.
Yeah, I got you. No, I
in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer. And the old Book of Common Prayer continues the vow, and it says, "Unto thee all my worldly goods I pledge." This is called oneness.
Right.
It's called unity. So all guilt is set aside. She got you with the package. You got her with the package. You got all the crap, and you got all the awesomeness. It's all in one package.
Yes, sir. Would it be fair, though, for me to
say... It's fair for you to combine all of your income, all of your assets, and all of your liabilities, and then begin to work the baby steps together. That's completely fair. You got married, dude.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, if you're like me at this time of the year, all of the school plays and meetings and invites from everywhere have completely drained your social battery. Or maybe you're like some of my friends who are bursting with energy so much that everyone may be telling you to just chill out a little. If you're having trouble navigating mismatched energy levels, boundaries, or finding people to do life with, it might be time to talk to a therapist. Therapy can be a place to open up with someone who's been trained to listen and walk alongside you and help you find paths through the chaos of mismatched energy levels and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, try BetterHelp. BetterHelp is completely online and flexible enough to fit your schedule. Just fill out a short questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra cost. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Deloney today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Deloney.
If you're new to all this Ramsey stuff, go to RamseySolutions.com. Click on Get Started. It's a free service that we have. It'll start teaching you some of the vernacular, some of the words we use around here, like baby steps and debt snowballs and all that kind of stuff. Also, it'll kind of teach you where you are. You take a little assessment. We'll show you right where you are and then what your natural next steps are. It's completely free. We're not trying to trap you into something. We're just trying to help you. So click Get Started at RamseySolutions.com. Yolanda's with us in Atlanta. Hi, Yolanda. How are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
Better than I deserve. What's up?
Well, I am calling because I have a life estate, or my mom has a life estate, and I am the remanderman is what it's called, I guess, when I looked it up.
The remainderman, yes.
Yes, the remainderman. And I got concerned because I've heard you talk many times when people call in about having property willed or whatever to them prior to the person's death, mm-hmm. and the tax ramifications that involves.
You got it. That's what's going on. So, you're now the owner of the property.
Well, my mom is still alive.
No. You're the owner of the property. She has rights to stay in the property as long as she's alive. That's a life estate.
Okay.
But it's already deeded to you.
Should I reverse it? Can I reverse it?
How long has it been going on?
I think it occurred in 2018. I'm not sure. I think it was.
Who did it?
That. My mom did it.
I know.
Me and my mom.
With an attorney or?
Yes, with an attorney.
Okay. I would check your tax pro and ask them and check an attorney and see. I don't know, since it's been sitting there so long, if you can reverse that or not. If you did it last month, you could just flip the paperwork back over and I wouldn't think anything about it. But it's been sitting there for 3 or 4 years now, 5 years now, and I don't know. Honestly, and I would make sure I had Georgia law, which is what's going to apply here. Because I assume that's where's the house?
Florida.
Oh, Florida law. Ooh, mm-hmm. Florida's got some wicked weird real estate laws. Florida, Texas, California in the column of weird real estate laws. And so they're actually weird good most of the time, but not always. And because it's an income tax free state, there's no state income tax there. So, yeah, so check out. Yeah, I think I'd talk to a tax pro, talk to an attorney, and if you can undo it, I think if you run the calculation on it, you're going to see that it's going to benefit you to undo it. Because basically, when you sell the house after her death, you're going to be paying capital gains on everything over what she paid for it.
Oh, no.
Because the house was gifted to you, you got her basis for tax purposes. Double check my tax advice because I'm not always right, but on this one, I'm right.
Okay, let me ask you one other question if you have time. Should I go back to the attorney who set it up? Would that be best?
After you've talked to a tax pro and you're armed with knowledge.
Okay.
Because otherwise, he or she may give you the arrogant attorney answer like, I'm never wrong because I have a law degree, which, of course, we all know is absolute horse crap.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, so...
Go ahead.
Yeah, in other words, you need to go back to this attorney after you talk to the tax pro and go, look, you're going to cost me with this an extra $40,000-$50,000 in taxes. What's the property worth, by the way?
The property is worth $347,000, and when my mom bought the house, when my mom and dad had the house built, the house was built for $40,000.
Okay, so you got a $300,000 gain, give or take, upon her death, and that is a gain you would not have to pay taxes on if she willed it to you. Now that it's already in your name, you're probably going to have to pay, if I got my answer right here, as a remainder, I'm almost positive this is true. So $50,000 swing. You're gonna pay $50,000 in taxes because they screwed this up. So yeah, I'm gonna go talk to my tax pro, verify that Dave is not crazy, okay? Which is possible, but it's possible I'm crazy. It's also possible I'm wrong. But yeah, this is going downhill fast, George. But
well, it's like going to a whole life salesman going, I want to undo this policy. They're gonna try to talk you out of it most likely. So that's why I want you.
You go, look, because of this, my basis is gonna be this. Right. And I'm going to have to pay taxes of $46,000 because you did this. Instead, right. She could have just stayed in her own stinking house and left it to me in the will, and I wouldn't have had to pay these taxes. Because right. you get what's called a stepped-up basis upon her death. Your basis becomes what the value of the house is at market value at the time of the time of death. So if she dies and the house is worth $360,000, you sell it for $360,000, you have zero gain. You put 100% of those dollars in your pocket. The way it is now, you're going to pay taxes on everything over what she paid for it, or about $300,000 gain. So it's okay. it's just dumb butt. Yeah, but double check all of that. And if it's true, then talk to this attorney about undoing it. He or she doesn't want to undo it. I'm talking to another attorney about undoing it. If I can pull that off 5 years into this deal in Georgia, I don't know if you can or not. You may be stuck.
I hope I'm not. In Florida.
It's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. Florida. I keep saying Georgia. But yeah, you're in Georgia. She's in Florida.
Yeah, I'm in Georgia. Yes, yeah, she's in Florida.
I'll get my story straight eventually. Here.
So a lot of people do life estates because they're trying to avoid probate. Is that the main reason?
Yes. Or they just don't know the basics, this basic tax thing we're talking about here. And it's a very basic. It's not a, if it's more than basic about taxes, I don't know it. Because I don't know anything about taxes. There's about four or five tax things I know. This just falls into the heading. One of them I know. And it's because I've run into it on different things lots of times over the years. But, yeah, and it's just kind of, it's like, I call it street law, where someone says, yeah, we're just going to give Bubba the house while I'm still alive. That way sister won't get it. You know, that kind of crap. And this is that's just street law. And it's street law meaning you think you can just do whatever the flip you want and there's no tax implications to it. Yeah, you can give Bubba the house, but there's gift tax implications and or capital gains implications when you give Bubba the house. Or in this case, not Bubba, but Yolanda. But yeah. But I mean it's and sometimes people do that to keep. It's not as much an estate planning thing. It's they somehow get in their head that the government's gonna get more.
Oh,
if they let it happen through a will, and the government gets less if you let it happen through a will, even if it's a probate, even if it's a state where the probate tax is a little high.
Yeah, probate is still cheaper than that tax implication.
Yes, yeah, less than capital gains tax. But I don't think there's a state that has a higher probate than capital gains. Mm. So it's more about control and lack of legal and tax knowledge, usually, than it is some kind of sophisticated argument that. That you're there, but you can use a life estate if you want to. It's okay, especially if you're not planning on selling the property. Like if it's a family farm and you were going to
just pass it down
100%, it's going to be generational. We're just not going to be selling it. Then sure, you know, that's fine. You go ahead and do a life estate, and the next generation keeps farming it, and the old people get to stay in the farmhouse, you know, and for life estate, that kind of stuff. That's lots of people do that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But again, it in Yolanda's case, it's handcuffed her big time as to what she can do with this property someday when, God forbid, her mother passes, but we're all going to pass. So. Mm.
Was there a right way to do it? Would you say, hey, if you want to do it, do a trust if you want to avoid probate? Is there a better scenario for that?
I would not make avoiding probate my primary goal in life. 'Cause all probate is the court system that executes the will. And so if you leave a will, the will is probated, meaning that the probate court enforces the will. That's all it means. Now some states have higher taxes on the size of the estate, and if you can avoid probate with a trust or with some other mechanisms, you're moving it outside of that probate tax. But in an effort to save a 3% tax on probate,
you pay a whole lot more.
You oftentimes can step over into a neck deep into the boiling grease. Mm. You know, I mean, it's bad. So you get just completely fried here. This is The Ramsey Show. Financial Peace University will teach you not only how to get out of debt, not only how to live on a budget, not only how to agree with your spouse about money, not only how to make it as a single person with money, not only how to invest and become wealthy, but how to be outrageously generous. We've got all of that in there. It's a big deal.
You're going to learn how to handle your money straight up from our experts. We've got a community of thousands of people taking the class with you and encouraging you. And guess what? The personalities, the Ramsey personalities, are doing Financial Peace University classes. George, have a bunch of people signed up for yours?
Oh, yeah. Mine starts June 20th, so I'm later on in the summer. Jade's and Rachel starts tonight, so that one's already booked up and ready to go. And we got Ken Coleman, Dr. John Deloney, so join any of
Cullen.
Them. Eddie Cullen, our host, is going to be leading one as well, so pick your poison. And a lot of people are doing it based off of times and dates. So mine's June 20th, 12:30 Eastern Time, 11:30 Central Time on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have Jade, some in the evenings.
Jade's is at night. Rachel's is at lunch, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, you can go to the page, fpu.com. Just go fpu.com, just like that. And or just go to RamseySolutions.com and click on FPU. You'll find it. But the personalities are doing classes, and you can get signed up, and they will be your coordinators. Now, the classes are still taught by the same videos that have George and Rachel, Dr. John Deloney.
The content doesn't change.
Me, the content's the same, but the coordinator of the class, you're going to have a Ramsey personality as your coordinator. Tony is in Austin, Texas. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the Ramsey Show.
Hi, Dave and George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
So, wanted to get your opinion. I have a little bit of a unique situation compared to most of your callers. I'm 27 years old. I've been really fortunate with the job I have now. I've been able to build up a pretty big nest egg, about $420,000 in cash.
Good for you.
And thank you. And I was really wanting to get both of your opinions on how I plan to diversify it.
Awesome. How'd you do it, by the way?
I work in medical sales. One thing I've always done really well is been able to save money, but I also have analysis paralysis, and I've been standing in my own way when it comes to investing and multiplying that money.
Okay. So it's just sitting in a savings account right now?
It is. About 100 of it is in a high-yield savings account, and then the other 320 is just in a conventional bank, which, of course, losing me money.
And are you wanting to go one particular way? Because we generally recommend mutual funds and real estate as a general investment recommendation.
So, and that's part of what I was wanting to gather feedback on. What I plan to do is I want to keep 50 in a high yield savings. I'm wanting to put 200 into mutual funds, and then the remaining 170 looking to both pay off my remaining student loan balance and then also put towards a real estate down payment.
So you don't currently have a home, you're renting, and how much consumer debt do you have?
I only have about 25 in student loans.
So the student loans can get paid 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Like before nightfall, dude. Today. Pay off your student loans. You hear me?
Mm-hmm.
You going to do that?
Yep.
And truthfully, I would rather just pay cash for a home versus get fancy with investing right now.
Yep. Yep. What price range home are you thinking about buying?
So, of course, I don't want to over leverage. I ideally want to stay under 400K.
Okay. You've got the money.
Yeah, just pay cash for a home. That's your next step. And then save towards, start saving towards investing at that point. And no, I would not put 50K. Do you have an emergency fund in addition to this, or is this your total cash position?
Total cash. And that's, of course, not including the 401K that I keep separate.
Right, right. Okay. So what is your income?
Last year was just under 450K.
Good for you.
Fantastic.
Man, you are slaying it. Okay, here's what I would do if I woke up in your shoes at 27 years old. You've done very well. You're a natural saver, and you have a fabulously large income. So, as you said, you've been very blessed. But you've also made a lot of good choices, and you're a hardworking guy, and you didn't exactly quiet quit your way into 450K. You've been kicking butt and taking names. Way to go. I like you a lot. Okay, so if I woke up in your shoes, I would follow the baby steps because I am positive after doing this for 30 years that they are the shortest possible route between where you are and substantial wealth. The shortest, fastest, safest route. So first thing is debt-free. So write a check today. Now we got $395,000 left after paying off the student loan. Did I do my math correctly?
You did, yep.
The next step is baby step three, 3 to 6 months of household expenses as an emergency fund. We can call that what we want to call it. You decide what that number is. for our purposes, let's see, 395, let's call it 45. That leaves us 350,000 if we put 45 into an emergency fund. That is not to be touched for anything but emergencies, by the way. That's a separate savings account, not to be touched for any reason unless a dire emergency happens. And when you're making 450K, there's not many dire emergencies you can't cash flow. Okay? So this is really, 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 really the backstop. So then we move on to baby step four. You start saving 15% of your income into 401ks and Roth IRAs. That's going to be a bit of a challenge, but you'll have to get to doing it, making your 450. Beyond that, I'm going to pay cash for my home. I think I got, if I did my math right, $350,000 left to pay cash for a home. And I would buy a home for cash for that much or less. Now, here's where we're sitting at this point. We have a fully funded emergency fund. We have zero debt, including a paid-for house, and you're freaking 27 years old. Now, from there on, 450, now you're in a heartbeat, you're going to have another 300 grand laying around, right?
Yes, sir.
Like a year? I mean, really, how much can you spend? Seriously. So, and you're not a spender anyway. So you, when the next time you come to me with this question, with a paid for house and no student loans and a fully funded emergency fund, George would tell you, okay, mutual funds are fine or paid for real estate is fine. Taking out a mortgage for real estate investing, I would not do. But I would buy some cash real estate with this future cash after we've executed this plan, or and I would do mutual funds. Tony, I personally have done both, and I'm the 62-year-old version of you, and I now own millions of dollars of both, real estate and mutual funds, tens of millions of dollars of both, real estate and mutual funds. And so that's where you're headed. You're going to, if you continue somewhat on this track, you're going to have a net worth in excess of $100 million.
I believe it. And you don't have to do real estate.
What the math says. He's 27.
Yeah. And if you follow social media, they'll tell you, you got to get into real estate. If you're not comfortable with real estate right now, go slow. You can just do mutual funds. There's no rule that says, but I want you to have a paid for primary residence regardless.
Don't buy real estate if you don't enjoy people and drama.
Dave enjoys both, clearly.
I do. I mean, conflict is like fun for hillbillies, so I like it, you know. But it's just drama, and there's going to be some drama. So if you don't want any drama in your life, don't buy real estate. Because it's even commercial real estate. You know, you get the small business, they can't go to work because Fauci said there's a quarantine or something. You know, I mean, stuff like that happens, right? So you got all kinds of problems. It's going to be there. And with mutual funds, you just open the email and it tells you how much is in there. No drama. Doesn't make you as much money, but no drama.
Yeah,
so
but
you can do either
upside.
Or both is what we suggest.
And both will appreciate over the long term.
Exactly.
History has shown us that.
Exactly.
You can become a multimillionaire either way.
Good mutual funds should be a 10 to 12% rate of return. The stock market has averaged 11.2 since inception. Real estate all in with value increases, cash flow, tax write-offs, everything included. It's called an internal rate of return there. Should be north of 17% if you got a decent piece of real estate.
That's if you do it right.
But it's got a hassle factor that the mutual funds doesn't have. It's got the drama and the people factor. And so some of both or both is fine. Anything in there is all right. So that's the plan. Good question, man. Good question. Congratulations. What a stud.
That's impressive. Those are the right questions to be asking.
Man.
27 making 450.
I mean, what's he going to? He's going to be a millionaire at 28 or 29.
Yeah.
28 or 29.
Ought to be making that much.
If he follows our suggestion. He screws around, goes in debt on that house to buy a house, and then messes around with all this other stuff, keeps the student loan around like it's a pet. You know, you're going to have a problem. But, dude,
get rid of
just
it, Tony.
Follow this system, man. It's really
That's
works.
Chump change in your world.
It really works. Why are you sitting on this student loan? What is it, a pet? Sally Mae's an ugly woman. Get her out of your house. This is The Ramsey Show.
Hey, George Campbell here. If you love the show and you want a deeper dive on your money journey, we've got a weekly newsletter that gives you helpful articles and tips on following the Ramsey way. Just go to RamseySolutions.com today to sign up for the newsletter. Again, that's RamseySolutions.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Hey, it's James, producer of The Ramsey Show. This episode is over, but check the episode notes for links to products and services you heard about during this episode. Thanks for listening.